You are now listening to True Murder, the most shocking killers in true crime history, and the authors that have written about them. Gacy, Bundy, Dahmer, The Night Stalker, BTK. Every week, another fascinating author talking about the most shocking and infamous killers in true crime history. True Murder, with your host, journalist and author, Dan Zupansky.
Good evening. A woman's dead body is tossed off a cruise ship. It's homicide on the high seas, a story of murder and greed, a true crime story you'll never forget. Why are you always killed by the one you love? A research vessel finds a woman's decomposing corpse floating in the Tyrrhenian Sea, about 20 miles off the Italian shoreline. Cruise ships frequent the area. Investigators' best guess is that she came from one of those boats, but which one? And is it a case of accidental death, suicide, or even murder? Only one boat reported the possibility that a passenger had gone overboard, so she had to have come from the Island Star. The mystery of how she died was also swiftly solved. For one simple reason, it had to be a case of homicide. So someone murdered this woman while both were aboard the cruise ship. Hundreds of people were on board the Island Star. Who was the killer? Another perplexing question. Why should the DA's office in Orange County, California, prosecute a murder that occurred off the coast of Italy? Prosecutors also have to deal with the fact that their star witnesses were thousands of miles away when Mary Takahashi went into the water. What complicated the prosecution's case even more was the propensity of their star witness to change their stories. Both had reasons to turn on the suspect. Would the jury believe them? The murder of Mary Takahashi, a shocking true crime story, tells a story of greed and murder, but is also an extraordinary tale of legal intrigue and guile as prosecutors work for more than a decade to put one of their own, a fellow attorney, in prison for the rest of his life. The book that we're featuring this evening is The Murder of Mary Takahashi, A Shocking True Crime Story, with my special guest journalist and author, Rod Cackley. Welcome back to the program, and thank you very much for this interview, Rod Cackley.
Well, thank you, Dan. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been not so long since we just spoke to you, but this is another extraordinary tale, The Murder of Mary Takahashi. Let's get right into this, as you do in the book, with this incredible conversation with one of the characters in this book named Richie Kadopoulos. And Go ahead.
He's the lawyer we're talking about. Now, Richie Kadopoulos is an interesting fellow because here in the beginning of the book, in Chapter 1, he's talking to his third ex-wife, May Dow Tran, about his second ex-wife, Mary Takahashi. And he says, quite simply, "I'm going to get rid of that bitch. Don't worry about it." Richie had a plan to get rid of Mary. That's really what this book is about, and it's about the other people who fall into this circle, I guess you could say.
Right. Now, you talk about May and his ex-wife and how they met on a dating site in 2003. So anyway, tell us again about this conversation, why he would want to murder one of his ex-wives, Mary, and why he's telling one of his other ex-wives, May, about this. Give us a little bit more background.
He wants to murder Mary because she will not agree. They're separated and divorced. He wants Mary to agree to sell a large property, the Ladera Ranch House. And if she will not agree to sell it, as he says, she has to go. And May says, "Go?" And Richie says, "Yes, go." And then he looks around to see if anyone's listening to him. Now, Richie, he's not a big fellow, but he gravitates towards small women. May, for instance, is a woman who stands about 4 feet 11 inches tall. She weighs only 99 pounds. A Vietnamese immigrant, smaller than Richie, one of the few people in Orange County, California, probably smaller than Richie. He's about a foot taller than her, but still he towers over her by benefit of his height and his personality. And he tells her, he whispers to her, I need the money from that house. If she won't sell, and she won't, Mary has to go. And yes, I mean she has to die. Now, he's talking to May because, well, he talks to May because he feels close to May, quite honestly. Like you said, they met on a dating website in 2003 when he had promised that he was breaking up with Mary for good. He marries May in July 2005, but May and Richie's marriage had only been consummated when they divorced, or barely been consummated when they divorced. She's a teacher in Riverside, California. They were married for 2 months before they broke up, and he went back to Mary. And now he's talking about murdering Mary. As you can see, this guy's love life is really complicated, but more than anything, he needs money. He's one of like 17,000 lawyers in Orange County who are constantly fighting for clients. And while he for a while was earning more than six figures, times have gotten to be a little rough for Richie, especially when, well, you can earn $100,000, but if you spend $100,001, you're broke. And that's pretty much where Richie finds himself. He needs money. And now he's talking to May about his plan, and she wonders if she's going, or if he's going to bring a guy named Barry Cash into this. Barry Cash is a former police officer now looking, working rather, as a private investigator, and May knows Barry as a tough guy. He seems like the kind of guy that Richie would recruit for this murder operation. And Richie tells her, well, no, damn it, Barry and his wife are not going to be a part of this. They're not going to go on the cruise. And this is when he tells May his plan. What he plans to do is promise Mary that he's going to marry her again in Italy. They'll take a plane to Spain and then a cruise ship to Italy, and that's where they'll be married again. But he has a plan. In his plan, Mary's never going to reach Italy. Or if she does, she won't be there very long. He plans to kill her.
Tell us a little bit about how they met, Mary and Richie, and their marriage and what it was characterized by. Interesting.
It was characterized by fighting. Mary is smaller than Richie, but she's not afraid to fight Richie. She has a real, they have a history of a violent marriage. And Barry tells May this later in the book, that Richie got beat up quite often by Mary. It wasn't her fist. She would just find things in the house to throw at her. And so it was a violent marriage. There's no doubt about that. But he claims to be in love with Mary again. Not only does he talk to May, but he talks to another friend, Sheila, and he says that he's serious, that he really is in love with Mary again.
So in May 26, 2006, this vessel, the Island Star, tell us about this cruise once they go, and also that Mary had told her mother what a wonderful idea was and told friends as well. So what was her expectation? And then tell us a little bit about the cruise starting May 26th.
Well, you know, Richie never had a problem spending money on his wives. He would throw money at them, but in this case, he went cheap. The Island Star is a boat that was a former freighter turned into a cruise ship, and it's the bottom of the line, really, when it comes to cruise ships, or at least the middle. Maybe the middle is a better way to put it. But Richie, one thing he does when he books passage on this boat is he makes sure that the travel agent guarantees him a balcony suite. Now, that's going to be important later on in the story, but he definitely wants to make sure there's a balcony outside his window. Now, right. Mary is all for this. She really believes that he wants to get married again, that they will be married again. As you said, she tells her mother that she's never been happier, that she feels great. So they dock at, they fly to Spain, and then they take the cruise to Messina, Italy, and that's where they get off the boat. They go down the runway, and she's having a great time. The weather is perfect, about 80 degrees, and so it couldn't be more ideal. She has a whole list of things that she wants to do, and she's telling Richie about it, but he's only half listening to her because he has something he wants to do too, but it definitely is not on her list. But they do spend the day in Messina, Italy, and then they go back on the ship, which is really a bargain basement ship. It is. Now, the way they met is Richie is an attorney, and May was an administrative assistant. They both worked for the same Los Angeles law firm. They fell in love and got married in 1995. But like we said, it was not an easy marriage. 5 years after the night they fed each other slices of wedding cake, Richie lost his job, fired after he was arrested on sexual misconduct charges involving a teenage girl. Now, the girl who was only 16 eventually dropped the charges, but this is where we're getting an inkling of the kind of person that Richie is. Mm-hmm. They got married in 95. They broke up in 2001. But that doesn't mean they stopped sleeping together. Even though Richie and Mary divorced, it was part of a strategy, Richie's idea, to protect their legal assets, he told her. They still shared a house and a bed. But it wasn't a marriage kind of relationship, although he would, you know, obviously if they were sharing a bed, they would do other things as well. She was arrested. She was physically abusive toward him. And it got to the point where she was arrested a couple of times. It got so bad that he left her, and that's when he found May on the dating website that you talked about.
Right. And you say that they met on a match site
right. Yeah. Yeah. While he was still with Mary. So they're in Messina, Italy now, and they had a great time that day. They go back to the ship. And they have a good buffet dinner like cruise ships always have. They drink a little bit, and they go to bed. But Richie, he has trouble sleeping, so he takes an Ambien and eventually goes to sleep. He wakes up in the morning, and Mary is gone. He can't find her anywhere. So he goes to the ship's captain. And well, he looks around. He checks the whole ship, and the boat is not that big. I mean, they're in the middle of the water. They're docked, but if she's on the boat, it should be just a matter of time before he finds her. It's only like 623 feet long and like 80 feet wide. So, but he can't find her. He spends most of the day looking for her, can't find her. Then he finds a crew member and explains the problem. And it's not unusual for someone to go missing on a boat, but usually they're found somewhere. So the crew member gets the captain, and they start a search. They spend the day searching. They announce her name, you know, Mary Takahashi, will you please come to the captain's office or wherever. And they spend the day searching, can't find her anywhere. Finally, the captain comes up to Richie and says, you know, this is a really tough thing to tell you, but it could be that she went overboard. Had she been drinking? Had she been depressed? And Richie says, yes and yes. She had been drinking, and she had been more depressed than normal. So, you know, wiping tears from his eyes, he kind of tells the captain, okay, I can understand this. Well, they get him an apartment, or a hotel room, rather, at the cruise ship's expense, and he's waiting there, and he's in a hotel room on shore. When some government people come in, American U.S. Embassy officers come in and explain to him that, you know, they did everything they could to find her on board. A corporate person tells him they've looked for the 100th time. I know the Island Star was searched top to bottom, bow to stern, starboard to port. Unfortunately, there is simply no sign of Mary. So he's got to believe that she went overboard.
And
could
you say too,
suicide, you know.
Yeah. And you say there is a discussion that likely she'll never be found, which is interesting for Richie to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And so they also advise him that he'd be best off just leaving Italy. So tell us tell us about the status of the not the investigation, but what happens June 8th, 2006, after he had this conversation with the consulate. They say it's better off to go to Italy, or pardon me, leave Italy,
mm-hmm.
go back home, and likely she may never be found. And then June 8th, 2006, tell us what happens with Dr. Rossi.
A body is found in the Tyrrhenian Sea, and Dr. Giovanni Rossi, talks to an official at the American consulate about the body, and he explains to the American embassy official that it has to be a case of murder. That first off, they believe they have the body of Mary Takahashi, even though it's partially decomposed. The woman was wearing a blue T-shirt and light green pajama pants, just like Richie said Mary was wearing the night as she went to bed, the last night that he saw her, when she disappeared from the Island Star. And so Dr. Rossi says, I believe we can confirm that this is the body of Mary Takahashi. Then it comes down to the question of how did she die? And Dr. Rossi says that she was strangled and then thrown into the Messina Strait. Her body floated for 2 days before being pulled from the sea. And then the question is, couldn't it have been an accident? Maybe in suicide? And Rossi says, no, there were injuries along the base of her neck that are not what you would normally see from a fall into the water. The injuries were the result of a violent act that was continued for quite a while, an extended period. So obviously someone had put their hands around her neck and were throttling the poor woman. There were bruises to both of her arms and her right thigh, consistent, he says, with intense grabbing maneuvers, Dr. Rossi, that is. There was also hemorrhaging in the soft tissues and muscles of her neck. Also, there were signs that she'd been hit over the head with a blunt object, maybe a wine bottle, for instance, that didn't break. She had not been raped, but he said she was definitely murdered. The American embassy official asked him that, don't bodies sink if they go in? And Rossi says, yes, a corpse will often sink. This young lady's body did not. It floated, and that's why he's positive that it's murder and not an accident or a suicide. The body didn't sink because there was not even a drop of water in the lungs. That means that someone attacked her, probably from behind, and killed her, and then threw her overboard. So Mary was dead before she hit the water.
Right. Now you talk about December 2006. Despite this, the Italian government decides not to further investigate this. However, you write that the FBI was very interested. Tell us what they discover and what they find immediately.
Yeah, they find immediately. Yeah, as you said, the Italian government doesn't get involved in this, but the FBI does. They get into Richie's bank accounts, and they find that after her death, Richie came into a windfall of cash that totaled about $500,000. That includes $319,000 from that house we were talking about, the Ladera Ranch property sale. Another $60,000 came from Mary's Vanguard retirement account, and close to $100,000, that was parked in joint brokerage accounts. FBI agents also found another $40,000 that Richie received from an investment account in Mary's name that listed Richie as the beneficiary upon her death. So, as one FBI agent said to another, it's a tidy nest egg, nearly 500,000 reasons that Richie could have decided Mary had to die. And Richie didn't take long spending the money. He less than 5 months after Mary's death, he buys a 3,300-square-foot, $607,000 home with four bedrooms and three bathrooms. Now he's in a private gated community in Safety Harbor, Florida. He's moved across the country. Now he's in Florida in a tax-free state. So obviously, the FBI's, red flags are up on this. He's definitely on their radar. Not only that, Richie does have a criminal record. He spent some time in Nebraska State Prison on a drug charge, paroled, and then he got picked up again on another charge. So he's done two separate bits in a state penitentiary on drug charges. Now, neither of those charges were big. This is in 76 and 77 when law enforcement had a totally different attitude about marijuana. Back in those days.
Sure.
But still, it's on his record. And there's also that record of the sexual assault charge that was dropped involving a 16-year-old girl. So they bring Richie in, and they talk to him, but they don't have a smoking gun. They do have a couple of people, though. Remember Barry, the guy, the private investigator? Barry Cash,
right,
and his girlfriend, they're thinking that those two might have something to say, and they also want to talk to May because they don't know that Richie explained the deal, the plan to her, they do know that they were close and that he might have. Well, the FBI talks to May and Barry. Both of them swear that Richie's a good guy, a great citizen, an upstanding individual. As a matter of fact, Barry tells a grand jury that he found Richie to always be, in his words, of the highest moral character and very ethical in his dealings with everyone. He says, I have no qualms representing Mr. Katopoulos to anyone. Excuse me. So that sucks the air out of the FBI's case. They've got really nowhere to go. But what do? They decide to turn it over to Orange County. And the Orange County District Attorney, Tony Steiner, tosses the ball, or the hot potato, if you will, to one of his people, Shannon Cash, a senior deputy district attorney. Now, Shannon Cash is an interesting person because she is definitely someone who wants to climb the ladder. Ahead of or after this, you know, some years between then and now, Shannon will run for public office. I mean, she is someone who wants to win. She's a very, very competitive person. So when she gets this case, she is not one to settle out of court. She goes after this, but she gets a break. Barry Cash, now Barry and Richie, they go back, but there's a money problem between the two of them. They have a long-standing dispute that involves thousands of dollars, and it's a situation that Barry and his girlfriend, Sheila McQueen, are afraid could cost them their PI licenses. So they've got a real problem with Richie. And it reaches a point where Barry, just after Shannon gets this case, Barry calls her office and says he needs to talk to her about Richie. He says that the statement he made to the federal grand jury, now he's admitting perjury here. He admits perjury and says now Richie probably did kill Mary. Barry can't prove it, but he argues Richie more than likely killed Mary because he needed money. Well, this changes the whole thing, and Shannon jumps all over this. He says going to Italy on the cruise ship wasn't Richie's idea. Whose idea was it? Barry says it was my idea, and the PI quickly adds, but I didn't want him to kill her. I just wanted to get Richie and Mary back together again. Hmm. Mary and Richie, he says, had gone through a really rough few years. She was drinking heavily, and she was so upset with Richie at getting caught with that teenager that who was pretending to be an adult. Charges were dropped, but Mary wouldn't let it go. Well, Mary, they got into terrible fights, and Barry says he was really trying to help Richie and get the two of them back together by putting them on that cruise ship and sending them to Italy. And then he says, I believe Richie killed her, and you really should talk to May. If you talk to May, she might change her story too.
Yes, and you say that very interestingly that Shannon Cash devises an idea to use this new information that Cash has given her to try to get May to get some information. She takes his suggestion. So what happens with the meeting with May, and how do they involve Barry Cash in this convincing May?
Yeah,
to change
this is
her statement?
this is really something. We should say Shannon Cash and Barry Cash, there's no relation between the two. No relation there. Just happen to share the same last name. Yeah, this goes we're now going to jump forward to February 2013. And so they bring May in. Now, remember, she's a Vietnamese immigrant. She, even though she's been in the country for quite a few years, and she's a teacher, and she's a very intelligent woman, she grew up in Vietnam during the years when the communists took over the whole country. So she has a completely different idea of what a government is and how a government might behave. Well, they put her into a room by herself with a couple of deputies, and she has no idea what's going on here. She has a master's degree in education, administration, and supervision. And all of a sudden, so she's a bright woman, but all of a sudden the detectives and Shannon Cash walk out of the room. And who walks into the room but Barry Cash, a man that she both hates and fears. She is scared to death now. She is in this room alone with Barry Cash. No police officers are around. She has no idea what's going to happen. Barry sits down and talks to her. I mean, this is, you got to remember, she's from Vietnam. And this is, she's on high alert. I mean, you don't come out of Vietnam without realizing what could happen when the government puts you in this kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Barry sits down and pounds on the table. This is a big guy. He's a tough guy. He's a former cop, and now he's a private investigator. He pounds on the table and tells her Richie is no good. He carries on pounding the table, yelling, I mean, being very dominant in this situation. And he gets to the point where he says, May says, I don't believe Richie could kill anyone. I'm not going to change that testimony. He wants her to change the grand jury testimony. May says that she does not believe Richie killed Mary, doesn't believe that Richie could kill anyone. Barry stops and he says, how can you help this guy who called you a whore? May catches her breath. He said, Richie called me what? And he says it again. He goes on and on telling May how little Richie thinks of her and how he used her. And then he says, you know, there's really only one way to put this, May. There's only one reason he wanted to be with you, and that's because of the way that you would have sex with him. And May couldn't believe it. Tears form in her eyes. She threatens. They run down her face. Richie told me lots of times the only reason he wanted to be with you, May, was because what he was into was anal sex, and you would let him do that.
Yeah.
So Barry leaves the room at this point. I mean, May is crushed, absolutely crushed. Barry leaves, and Shannon comes in. Now she's not Shannon anymore. Her nickname is Susie, by the way. Now she is Susie. She's talking to a friend, May. And it's just a couple of women talking. And May and Shannon's been listening to the whole thing, obviously, and watching it. She gets May to admit that she lied to the grand jury because Richie told her to lie. He ordered me, she says, not to tell the truth and said he would kill me if I didn't do what he wanted. That's what May tells Shannon. Well, bingo, light goes off in Shannon's head, light bulb goes off above her head. This is better than she thought she would get. May talks about what it was like when Richie came home from Italy, thinking that, believing that Mary was, knowing that Mary was dead. She said he was bothered by it, but he didn't sleep on the sofa. He slept in bed. I guess you could say, May says, we had comfort sex. I just wanted to make him feel better. Then we went to sleep, and Richie went back to his house in the morning. Anyway, May and Shannon do a deal. Shannon gets May agrees to testify as long as, with one provision, they don't bring up her sex life in court. She does not right. want that to come up. But other than that, she's willing to talk. Then Shannon issues an order to have Richie arrested in Florida and extradited back to Orange County as soon as possible.
Let's use this, Rod, as an opportunity to stop for a second to talk about our sponsor, which is Ritual. Gaps in the diet shouldn't be ignored. Over 97% of women aged 19 to 50 are not getting enough vitamin D from their diet, and 95% are not getting their recommended daily intake of key omega-3s. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin was formulated by exhaustive research to help fill nutrient gaps in the diets of women ages 18 plus. It is formulated with nutrients to help support brain health, bone health, blood health, and provide antioxidant support. But Ritual didn't stop there. They invested in a gold standard university-led clinical trial to prove the impact of Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin. The results? Essential for Women 18 Plus was shown to increase vitamin D levels by 43% and omega-3 DHA levels by 41% in 12 weeks. My wife Lisa started taking Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin over 2.5 years ago. She was impressed with how taking the multivitamin made her feel. I decided to take Ritual Essential for Men 50 Plus. It's been almost a year now, and I'm convinced Ritual has made a significant difference in how I feel every day. Right now, Ritual is offering my listeners 10% off your first 3 months. Visit ritual.com/murder and turn healthy habits into a ritual. That's 10% off at ritual.com/murder. Now, Rod, we were talking about that May has finally been convinced via Barry and by Shannon that it's in her best interest to testify against Richie at a grand jury. So you talk about May 2013. You talked about him being arrested and then extradited from Florida to Orange County. What about a setback, in May 2013? What is the setback?
Yeah, May 31, 2013, here's the real problem. Remember where this murder occurred. This murder occurred in Italy, actually in the waters off Italy, the Tyrrhenian Sea. So what jurisdiction does Orange County have? That's the argument that Richie's attorneys bring up to Superior Court Judge Warren Everett. They say California should not be involved in this. The United States should not be involved in this. And certainly Orange County should not be involved in this. And the judge agrees with them. This is a huge setback. But Shannon is not about to give up. As soon as she learns that this is going to happen, she files another case against Richie, alleging murder with special circumstances. That will allow the case to be tried in California and in Orange County. She argues that Richie murdered Mary for one reason and one reason only, financial gain. That is a special circumstance, and that should give us jurisdiction. They file immediately. I mean, Richie never goes home. As soon as the gavel goes down and Judge Everett says that the first trial is thrown out, Shannon files this second charge. And so you saw high fives at the defense table in the morning. In the afternoon, high fives at the prosecution table. The trial will go on.
What are the main prosecutorial challenges, as you write?
Well, a burden of proof. You know, that's the big primary hurdle, is the burden of proof. Back in November 08, to confiscate more than $1 million of his money, DOJ prosecutors declared Richie guilty of murder in civil proceedings, but that case was pretty much laughed out of court on the criminal side. So they've got a real and they're working with two people who admit perjuring themselves, May and Barry. So their witnesses aren't the strongest, and I'm sorry, my mind snapped. The burden of proof is going to be their problem to prove that they're going to have a real problem proving that Richie did this, because they have no witnesses. Nobody saw this happen. Nobody saw Mary hit the water. No one really has a clue how she got in the water. How are they going to prove this? That's the real problem.
Mm-hmm.
But she's convinced that she'll win the case. She's convinced that the totality of the evidence leaves no doubt as to the fact that Richie murdered Mary.
Right. So there's all kinds of defense motions and arguments in this, but you write that in May 15th, 2015, there is a letter to complicate this. You call it a monkey wrench in the case, potentially. Tell us about this letter and its contents.
Yeah, this letter, this is in June. Yeah, this happened, the letter in May, but it happens in June when Shannon finds out that Richie, while he was in jail, actually tried to get a couple of guys to go to May and kill her and get her to reverse her testimony, go back to the original grand jury testimony, and then he promised to pay them money if a certain amount if they would get her to change it, change and then sign it and then kill her. So they wanted these guys to kill her so that, you know, she would disappear, that she would never testify. Well, fortunately for May and Shannon and everyone involved on the right side of this case, these two guys figured that, money aside, the real opportunity of this letter, and Richie actually wrote this down too, which is a real mistake, but the real advantage they had here was they had a letter from him that they could use to leverage a get-out-of-jail card for themselves.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about finally, when they finally get to trial, and also, again, this COVID-19 pandemic and how it complicates this trial as well.
Yeah. Now we're down to February 6, 2020. And Richie, you would not recognize this guy if you had seen him back when this story started and then on this day in 2020. He's gained a lot of weight. He always had a buzz cut, haircut. Is gone to salt and pepper, from salt and pepper to all salt. His trimmed beard is now running ear to ear along his jawline. You would not recognize him. You'd think you were looking at the wrong person. Well, his life is on the, because he's been sitting in jail, and the food is never that great. And you're sitting in a 6x8 cell. There's not a whole lot of exercise opportunity. The trial goes on, though. And everything was delayed because of COVID, of course. That was a real problem. Everything was delayed because of COVID. But it goes to trial, and Shannon argues in her opening statement that Richie only got Mary on the Island Star so he could strangle her and then planned to throw his ex-wife's body overboard and solve his financial problems. He no longer loved Ms. Takahashi, Shannon said in her opening statement. He remained with her only for financial reasons. And then she said that Mary was dead before she hit the water. She didn't take a single breath when she hit the water because someone within arm's length had choked the life out of her. Now, Richie's attorney, Dawn Graham, leaps to her client's defense in this morning session and makes it abundantly clear that she's going to challenge every point of the prosecution's case. She says there are very few things in the case that are not contested. So this really goes back and forth. This is really quite the legal battle and really is kind of a thrilling part of the book, I think, because you really see them going back and forth, and neither is convinced. It's not a slam dunk for either one, either Dawn or Shannon.
What is the contention outlining by Shannon and Sheldon later in closing arguments? But what is their contention on why this happened? And also how they plan to counter the former testimonies of Richie's partner, Barry Cash, and also his ex-wife, May Tran.
Yeah, now with May, Shannon's, first off, it's all financial according to Shannon. Richie had nothing but financial problems. And this, he had to get this house sold and he had to get that extra money, the $500,000 we talked about. He needed this money desperately. That's the primary motive, according to Shannon. Now, when it comes down to May admits on the stand that Richie bought her a house when they got married. She also said he gave her money for a car and even paid off thousands of dollars in her credit card debt. So why would May have any kind of a grudge against Richie? That's Shannon's argument. In effect, she tells the jury that May is not a woman trying to get revenge against an ex-husband. She's implying to the jury that this is a woman you can believe. She has no reason to hold a grudge against Richie. But then Dawn Graham gets up, the defense attorney, and she goes after May with everything she's got. She grills May over the assertion that Richie had talked to her about plans to kill Mary. Again, remember, no witnesses to that conversation. Dawn asks her, why didn't you go to the police? As soon as he told her that he was going to kill Mary, why not go to the police? She says that I told him not to kill Mary, and I really didn't think Richie was serious. But, again, Dawn brings up the point that's not what you told a federal grand jury, and she plays the tape of May's testimony before the grand jury, and where May is asked if Richie ever threatened to hurt Mary. And the jury hears, clear as a bell, May on that tape saying no. So she also goes after May because of conflicting stories that she told in the past about Richie's relationship with Mary, as well as her own relationship with Richie. So May has a real problem with telling the same story twice here. Shannon gets up for follow-up questions, and she asks May one simple question. Did you love him? May hesitates for a moment and then says softly, she whispers, yes. Shannon has one more question. Do you feel that Richie Kanopoulos loved you? May thinks about that for a second and finally says, I think so. So that's the last that the jury hears. Now, the jury hears all this evidence. Now, that evidence we're talking about in testimony was in February. Again, we've got a real delay here because of COVID, February to May 2020. So May 28th, 2020, we're back in the courtroom. Excuse me. We're back in the courtroom, and the jury gets the case.
But in February, what we didn't talk about is, and this is unusual for a defendant to take the stand, does Richie take the stand?
Oh, yeah, Richie takes the stand. And this is, he tells the jury there's no truth to the testimony from Mary and Barry that he planned Mary's murder. He, however, does agree that he and Mary had a stormy, tempestuous relationship. He says she was often depressed, suicidal, and could quickly become violent. When she was drinking, Richie testifies, her emotional reaction was unpredictable. He says he tried to get Mary help, but she was unwilling to go into an alcohol treatment program. He also insists through today's testimony that he never once said a word about taking Mary's life away, about eliminating Mary, nor did he ever speak a word about taking anything into my own hands, quote unquote, is what Richie said.
You also had his attorney, Don Graham, portraying him as a real advocate and assistant to Mary when she was depressed and alcoholic, and he was a very understanding and financially supportive, and posed basically that was proof that he would not harm her. Why would he help her to then later harm her? Why would he spend money but then not be wary of how much money she had? So she did try to portray him in that benevolent light, didn't she?
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then in the closing arguments, now another attorney, Sean Sheldon, takes over, a senior deputy district attorney. He argues the evidence shows Richie believed that he not only had a perfect plot to kill Mary, Sheldon contends Richie also thought dropping her corpse off a cruise ship balcony into the water below was ideal for turning a homicide into an accident. He said the scheme fits Richie's personality. He took his plan, says Sheldon, or he took his time, rather. He's a planner. He likes to control the situation. Then Shannon Cash gets up and presents in response to the defense's contention that Richie was only one of some 2,000 suspects on board the Island Star when Mary died. Remember, there are 2,000 souls on this ship. Well, who's to say that Richie's the one that killed Mary? Shannon says, who else on the cruise ship would have even known her? And who else on the cruise ship would have even had a motive to kill Mary? So that's how they beat that. But then Don Graham jumps up to Richie's defense. And, he tried to have her removed as a court-appointed attorney. Remember, this guy's a lawyer, and he wanted her out, but the judge refused to remove her. Don Graham asks the jury, would you believe the prosecutor's two most critical witnesses, Mary Tran and Barry Cash? They admitted lying in their federal grand jury testimony. Then they both did a 180 before a California grand jury. How can you be sure they're telling the truth now? Don also stresses Richie didn't even know that Mary died. That's what his story was. Richie only knew that he didn't have anything to do with her passing. So that's what the jury is left with. I mean, both sides, defense and prosecution, made very strong arguments, I thought, in this case, especially where you have a dead body, but you don't have any witnesses. Not a single witness saw this murder happen or this death happen.
Let's use this as an opportunity to stop for a second for these messages. Now, you say they both tried this case well. They defended the client, and they prosecuted this case to the best of their ability. So what happens with the jury deliberation? And as you write, what's the indication when the jury comes back quickly? What happens in this case? What?
When the jury comes back quickly on September 18th, 2020, Don Graham's head almost hits the table. It doesn't take long, just a few hours, and the jury comes back. And to them, it was ironclad. The jury just felt that this was ironclad, the verdict guilty, and the sentence, life in prison for the murder of Mary Takahashi. Emotion spills over in the courtroom. I mean, Mary's family is rejoicing. Her friends and family are rejoicing. Richie's side, of course, they're angry, and Richie is angry. He believes that he wants to appeal right away. The story about the letter that he sent where he wanted his two guys to kill May. One of the things, he jumps up and yells, hitmen don't send invoices. And with that, the case is closed. He's going to appeal, and pending appeal, he'll be in prison for the rest of his life.
It's interesting you talk about the victim impact statements, and these people have waited for years to be able to make some statement to this vile person that's taken their loved one's life away. But he also, as per his right in front of Judge Cohn, he gets to make a statement too. What's
right,
that
and
statement?
That's where he, Yeah, this is his statement is that he is innocent. He's totally innocent. Excuse me. Richie, rather than standing silently by, as many convicts do when sentences passed, Richie says, "I did everything I could to help Mary Takahashi overcome her depression. I did not murder Mary Takahashi." He was adamant that he was innocent of this crime, that he was not guilty of this crime. Then he takes aim at Mary's brother and says, "You and your whole family abandoned Mary," he yells in courtroom. She had nobody but me. And at that point, the judge, Roger Cohn, decides that he and the court has heard enough. In the court's mind, there's no question of guilt, he says, and he sentences Richie to life without parole. But this was a heck of a scene in the courtroom. You know, you don't see this in the victim statements. Usually the convicted murderer, if you will, the killer, hangs his head or just stares stoically ahead. It's usually a very emotional time. Richie gave as good as he got in that scene. And he's adamant that he's innocent.
Yeah. And in regards to the solicitation to commit murder and solicitation to bribe a witness, what was the status or what was the results from that?
Judge Cohn decided to drop that case. No second trial for Richie. After all, you know, how much impact would a sentence of 11 years have? The witness killing thing, that was 11 years. How much would that have when you tack that on to life without parole?
Yes.
So he doesn't have to worry about that.
What I thought was interesting, and it wasn't really spoken to in the book, was Barry Cash and his story when he decided to change his statement and contact prosecutors and say, "Listen, we have a business agreement, me and Richie. However, like you had just mentioned, that he and his girlfriend's licenses were in jeopardy and thousands of dollars was at stake over this bad business agreement. So now he wanted to change his statement regarding not business agreements, but this murder in itself." What I thought was interesting is that the prosecutors are never questioned the idea that Barry said, "Listen, it wasn't Richie's idea to go on this cruise. It was my idea, and it wasn't my idea to have him kill her after this or during this tour, this cruise, but rather to get them back together." And that, despite what apparently Richie had said to May regarding Barry's involvement initially, that he and his girlfriend were going to go on that cruise. I just thought it was very interesting that that is never questioned. It seemed suspect, that story, a little bit.
I know. I thought that story was suspect, too. I think what it came down to was the condition of Mary's body, that someone had strangled her, according to the doctor, Dr. Rossi. That someone had strangled her and threw her overboard. And the feeling, I think, when you look at Richie and the way he handled the finances, which he did nothing illegal there with the finances, and raised the red flag. But when you look at the way she died, someone must have choked her and thrown her over. And whether Barry's idea to get the two of them together and whatever Barry's motivation was, you could make the argument that Barry was an accomplice in this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If he set up the cruise, and if Richie told May that he was going to kill her and pretty much laid out the plan, and then, this whole thing is just – but I think sometimes it comes down to getting a conviction, maybe. I don't know.
Absolutely, yeah. They were quite easy, too, as you write – well, you don't say they were easy, but they had problems with May's account because it lacked detail. In fact, she said, "Well, he threatened me on the telephone, or maybe it was in person. I'm not sure." As you write in the book, that had pause for the prosecutors, didn't it, for a second?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, Shannon had terrible witnesses. I mean, I don't know how the jury – I don't know why the jury believed May. I honestly don't. I don't know why she believed May. They believed May. I don't know why they believed Barry. And I just don't. I can't explain that. I just do not know why.
This is interesting that Shannon Cash's idea to try this for special circumstances was really a brilliant move, wasn't it?
It was. Otherwise, it never would have been tried if she hadn't come up with that. It never would have gone to court, gone to trial.
Yeah. And the other thing that was really, again, almost from, you know, beyond the grave, in that there was this oceanic vessel, research vessel, that found the body. And then what I found was the most profound moment in this whole story was, well, I thought the body sank. Why wouldn't the body sink? Why would it float?
Mm-hmm.
And then
the idea that was there.
Yeah, it was filled with air.
And yeah, you're right. If that boat had not gone there at that specific time, the body never would have been found, or it would have been so, you know, it wouldn't. So many things have to line up in order to make this happen.
And to me, amazingly, too, he had May's cooperation, even though everything that he had ever promised her was a lie. And so through Barry's initiative and then Shannon Cash pushing it. But again, very interestingly, that all these things had to happen and easily wouldn't have happened unless that Mary's body, again, almost from the grave where she floats and is found and Richie Kadopoulos is brought to justice.
Yeah, and if Barry hadn't dropped that bombshell about why Richie really liked May or wanted to be with May, if he hadn't dropped that bombshell, I don't think she would have changed her testimony.
Absolutely. I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about the murder of Mary Takahashi, a shocking true crime story. I know we spoke earlier. Is there another book that you're working on that's soon to be released that we could talk about briefly?
Yeah, I am working on a book that I think is the most incredible story I've ever written, to be quite honest. And it's not that I'm a great writer, but this is just the most incredible story. It's the murder of Thora Chamberlain. Thora Chamberlain is a 14-year-old girl who vanished on November 2nd, 1945. A guy pulls up alongside her and her friends. They're walking out of their high school at Campbell Union High in California. They're going to go to a high school football game. A guy pulls up and says, "Hey, I've got $5. Will one of you girls help babysit my sister's kid so that, and just for a couple hours, will you go with me?" Thora goes with him, and it's the last time she's ever seen alive. It's the last time she's ever seen. Well, actually, there was one more time she was seen alive. That's when a woman is out getting her mail from a roadside mail, post office spot mailbox, and a car speeds by, and she happens to look out, and she sees a girl matching Thora's description, clawing at the window, panicked, trying to get out. The woman says she has never seen such fear in her life. This is the story. So the FBI, this is a kidnapping. The FBI unleashes its top kidnapping expert, a guy who helped bring down John Dillinger. The FBI puts everything they have into this case. They chase this guy from California to Illinois and back again. And they find him. He confesses and says that he killed Thora. Then they have to find the body. He says he threw off a cliff in the Pacific Ocean. And the search for the body and what goes on with this is the most incredible story that I have ever told. The guy is convicted. This killer is convicted, Thomas Henry McMonagle. He's convicted and sentenced to die. Then, guess what? A scientist appears on the scene, and he says, "Hey, I can bring dead dogs and dead cats back to life. I would like to bring you back to life." And McMonagle says, "Yeah, I'll do that. After the gas chamber, bring me back to life." Well, California says, "No way. If he's sentenced to death and then comes back to life, do we have to release him?
Oh.
Or do we have to kill him again?" And the warden of San Quentin says, "No, I'll settle this. I'm not going to have some mad scientist setting up a laboratory in my prison. So that's not going to happen." But the people who, and then while they're looking for Thora's body, another woman winds up dead. And they find it, and then the wife of a guy who finds this woman, she winds up dead. So there's all these little mysteries going on in this story. And it's just an incredible story about a pedophile. Thomas Henry McMonagall was a pedophile. Women love this guy, by the way. Women literally break down the doors of the courthouse in California to get a look at this guy.
Jesus.
But his problem is he doesn't like women. He likes teenage girls. And when he was a bus driver in San Mateo, the teenage girls he would pick up, they would agree to meet him and then stand off in the bushes and laugh at him while he was waiting on the street for them.
Well,
he loves teenage girls. And actually, before he picked up Dora, he tried to pick up a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old, but they ran away.
Incredible story. When is this slated for publication?
It should be out next month. I think this will be out in January. It's The Murder of Thora Chamberlain.
Oh, sounds great. We'll be looking forward to that, and I'm sure we'll have you back on talking about that incredible case as well. Again, I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about the murder of Mary Takahashi, a shocking true crime story. You have a website that you might refer people to? And
yeah, rodcackley.com, RODKACKLEY.com, rodcackley.com.
Great. Thank you so much, Rod. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And again, talk to you in January with the new book. Have a great evening.
Thank you, Dan.
Good night.